Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. I'm your host, Michael Gay. Time is now 6.03 p.m. on the East Coast, 3.03 p.m. on the West. Today is the 10th. Yeah, it's the 10th. 10 days into this month, the month of June, 2023. We have a lineup of things to talk about. Of course, we're going to touch into these politics, the thing that nobody ever thought, well, maybe some people, but many people didn't think was going to happen. Donald Trump was indicted. Yeah, again. Okay, but this time it's a whole... And this is going to be a very different, unique, amazing, controversial... Right. You just pick any word. Election season, because you look at the field, you know, of possible candidates, and you know, it's comical to me that some of these people, some of them that are running, don't stand. What do they say? The chance of a snowball in hell of winning the presidency, but they're going to run anyway. And I wonder why. When you know you're not going to win, but you're going to run anyway. And people say, well, will this cause interference? Will this, you know, change the count for the front runner and this, that, and the other? Folks will vote for the one that they know is going to win, but, you know, just to throw that, you know, what is that term again? I'm trying to think of these crazy terms. Just throw that monkey wrench in there, as they say. To try to set it off in a different way. So we're going to talk about a few of those things. And also, you know, this Stand Your Ground played for a while in Florida, and other states had to stand your ground law, by the way. We were abruptly introduced it during the Trayvon Martin situation. A lot of people didn't know that these laws exist in different states, but Florida introduced it to us, and now someone else was trying to use it. And they shot and killed someone, and they, as many people say, I feared for my life. Well, you got to look at the evidence. You got to look at the circumstances. You got to look at, well, okay, hold on. Let's go back and take a look what was going on first in order to make that plea. So we're going to talk about that story. And then another story is really complex in a sense to me, because here's a former police officer, or formerly worked for this particular agency, who shot and killed a 15-year-old. One story says one thing, another story says another, and I'm trying to figure out which story is which. I mean, it's confusing, because one relative of the officer says, well, he didn't have a daughter, so the story about the teen, the 15-year-old who was caught at the house seeing the daughter, is untrue. It's saying that there's no daughter, that the teen was robbing the house. So we're going to get into that. So I'm just holding off, seeing if my co-host is going to make it in. I haven't seen them. Well, I know one is not going to be able to make the door show, because he has a show to do tonight, and that's Mr. Tynan Shipp. Tynan is fire on the comedy tour. In fact, he's going to be in, let me see here. What did Tynan say he was going to be this evening? He's going to be in San Diego. So for all you folks that are in the San Diego area, you know, it's a Comedy Heights presents today Phil Johnson and Tynan Shipp, plus Matt Duckett, Maria Harma, and Al Gavier at, you know, it's comedy every Saturday there at starting at 8 p.m. And this is going to be at Comedy Heights. There's no cover charge, no minimum. And this is at 4590 Park Boulevard, University Heights, corner of Park and Madison, next to Twigs. I don't know what Twigs is, but yeah, again, it's at 4590. And this flyer is kind of small. Let me, okay, here we go. 4590 Park Boulevard, University Heights, corner of Park and Madison, next to Twigs. The phone number is 619-679. 5960, that's 619-679-5960. Again, starts at 8 p.m., no cover charge, no minimum. Man, that's great. Most places, they want to charge you, or they want to make you drink something. You know what I mean? And I get it. You know, they sell the tickets, and they want to, you know, fill up the seats and everything, but it gets me when some places, you know, it's like, minimum, you got to buy at least two drinks. Oh, can I have a Dr. Pepper? $5. $5 for a one Dr. Pepper and half the glass is ice. Yes, it is. $5. We got to pay these comedians. But no, here, no cover, no minimum. So like I said, if you're in that area, please check out this lineup tonight starting at 8 p.m. Phil Johnson, Tynan Shipp, and a host of others. All right, so see, I told Tynan I can give a good plug. All right, I see that the lady of the house is here, so I'm going to open up her mic. Please welcome. Uh-oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Come on now, laptop. Don't do this to me. Oh, are you serious? Oh, there it is. Woo. It just went black for no reason, just for 1 second. Okay. Make sure everything's cool. It looks like it's going to act right. Please welcome to the show the lady of the house, the one and only Ms. Janet Pollock Hawkins Davis. Hey, Janet.
When I was still on mute, I thought I wasn't on mute, and I said, just say my name, you know. You ain't got to say Janet Pollock. Oh,
hey,
my mom.
Hey, happy Saturday to you.
And listen, one more thing. If I'm going to buy a drink and it's $5, don't put no ice in my drink.
Hello. There you go. That's true. I don't want to pay $5 for a glass of ice. I really don't.
Mm-mm.
And that's really what happens. That's really what happens. But I like the flyer here that China sent. You know, no cover, no minimum. So that's great. Ah, good old days. Look, before we get into this, and this first hour, you guys. In fact, I'm opening up the chat room. Sorry, chat room. Let me put this in here. But before we get into this saga or the continued saga of Donald Trump, I want to share something else real quick I found kind of amusing, and then we'll get into it, all right? Show you how my day started. So last night I took public transportation home, right? And I had a bag in my hand, and I stopped by a store, package store, and I don't like walking around a store with a bag in my hand, strictly for the reason that you become they look at you suspicious, right? You know, I'm quick to say, hey, can I leave this here, you know, while I shop or whatever? Oh, no, you can walk around. But no, I don't want you to accuse me of putting something in it, right? But anyway, chair there, and I set the bag down on the chair, got the items I wanted and paid for, and then left the store. And I'm just like halfway to my house, but the store is real close. I just got off work. And it dawned on me, I said, damn it, I left that bag there. So I get home, and I call the store, and no one answers. They have about maybe 10, 15 minutes before they close. No one answers. And I said, okay. So I call the store today, and I tell the guy what happened. Hey, look, I left the bag, this is the thing, blah, blah, blah. He says, no, I do not see it here. I don't know, but the people who work might come in at 4. I said, okay, cool. I'll just come up there at 4 o'clock. So I go up there at 4 o'clock, and I don't see any other people that work at night there. I see the regular day crew. And this is after 4, to be honest. And I said, hey, I called earlier, and I told them what happened, blah, blah, blah. And one of the persons who worked at night came around the corner, and he put something down, and he went back into the back. And I said, yeah, he was here last night. So I'm in earshot, and I hear the owner asking, hey, the guy here looking for a bag, he left me. He said, yeah. I said, well, where is it? He said, oh, it's at my house. That's odd. I'm like, okay. And I hear him tell the owner, well, you know, I'll just go get it. You know, it's not a problem, I think. So he comes out from the back. He said, hey, man, how you doing? I said, hey, man, how you doing? He said, fine. He said, yeah, well, I got it at my house. I said, oh, okay. He said, let me run and get it. I said, okay. So he hops on his bike, and he goes to his house, and he comes back. And let me tell you what was in the bag. It was 6 rolls of toilet paper and some Glade air freshener. Yeah. It gets better. He comes back on his bike with the bag. He hands me the bag, and I look. Now it's 5 rolls of toilet paper. Mind you, I had 6 of them. Now it's 5 rolls of toilet paper in the bag. And he hands it to me, and I look at the bag, and I look to see if the Glade is still in there, because I already noticed that one roll of toilet paper is missing. In that length of time from last night to today, you went ahead and opened up my package, technically, and used my toilet paper. And he quickly said, hey, I'll give you $2 for the missing roll. I don't even want to get into where I could have said, MF, blah, 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 what the hell, blah, blah. I didn't even want to do that. Crossed my mind, I said, you know, it's only toilet paper. He needed it, I guess, badly. And so he gave me the $2. He said, I'm sorry, man, but, you know, I didn't know who belonged to. Obviously, it belonged to somebody. And obviously, you should have known they were going to come back looking for it. We're talking about toilet paper. Something that was worth more than anything on earth during the pandemic. But that's the story I want to share.
Okay? So never leave toilet paper anywhere you go. Okay, so Jen, I'm just opening up the chat room. And let's see. And so we should be good on it. All right, so this week, I believe it was Thursday. No, it was Wednesday, right? Well, Wednesday, I think they had an inkling of it. But Thursday, Donald Trump was federally indicted. And at the time when they announced it, they said 7. But now it's gotten up to how many counts now, Janet?
Well, the thing is, they were predicting 7. But when Jack Smith came out, it ended up being 31 and 6, which is 37 counts.
So they were only off by 40, right? Okay, so they were only off by 40 points.
They were just speculating, though. They didn't know, you know. They thought it was only going to be 7 counts.
I know a lot of folks wish it was only 7 counts, but including Donald Trump.
Yeah. Wow.
Hold on just a second.
Yeah.
Let me see something here.
But I out of that the 37 counts, 31 was he was 30. Well, one count. Well, I know they had counts that were from. I got to look at it. Hold up. I don't want to tell a fib. I know one thing Trump is wishing. Okay, they said, okay, so he had 31 counts was for instruction of justice and conspiracy to and construction of justice, I think it said. Another count was false statements that he did and withholding information. And then they had one that was mishandling classified documents. Also, again, making false statements. You know, he's in a lot of trouble because he was caught on tape talking. It's not like somebody made something up. It came out of his mouth what he was doing. And the lawyer number one that's in the document, he knew that Trump was trying to set him up, and that's the one that wouldn't sign the paperwork saying that all the papers was turned over to the archives, and he had the lawyer sign that paper. He knew that Trump was trying to set him up, so he refused to sign those papers. It's sad. It's sad.
Yeah, and I watched, well, there's a few things I wanted to get into. And, you know, I watched some clips of the other candidates or individuals who were trying to run for presidency in the Republican Party. Some of them are being very careful what they say, but not Chris Christie. And he's just saying his name flat out that that's not the direction or that's not where the Republican Party should go. But I'm surprised at some that are just waiting in the wings. Because
they're
technically
walking
they
on
really
eggshells.
Yeah, well, in a sense, because in a way, here's the thing I'm looking at is that where really we don't know and we're not going to know. We have to see what happens moving forward as far as when will this whole thing really come to an end. Will it end before the presidency? Before the election or afterwards? And will the MAGA, you know, party still support Donald Trump as the information comes out? Now, I've listened to a lot of shows and I've listened to a lot of Trump's supporters. I've listened to individuals, even Mike Pence, say that, well, it's not fair. It's not fair. I've listened to Fox. Yes, I do watch Fox News, and I expected that from Fox and other channels that, they're just, you know, going after the president, never done that. What about Biden having secret documents? What about, you know, even piss? You know, the
Bible,
you know, they'll even
put on,
well, here's what I'm saying. Let me say this. They'll even turn on their own. But the thing that got me was this, is that I'm thinking the whole time, well, obstruction, okay, is obstruction. When Biden, when they went after Biden about those documents, Biden didn't try to hide them. Pence didn't try to hide them. They were like, oh, yeah, okay, here you go. Take them.
But they didn't go after Biden. Biden, they turned the documents in. Pence turned the documents
in. That's what I'm saying, right? They didn't have to go through having to, you know, get the FBI to go and search for the documents. You know, they let them know, hey, look, we have a feeling that you have some documents that belong, you know, that you should not have. Oh, okay, here you go. But that's a different story with the Trump camp. Oh, no, we don't. Okay, well, here's some, yeah. And then by Trump saying that he can declassify documents anytime he wanted to. But there's a process, correct? There's a process of it.
Yeah, but Michael, he even got on tape saying he really can't classify the documents anymore.
Right.
You know, you're
right.
Telling people out in the open, but then behind closed doors, you say, oh, well, this is a classified document. You can't look too close at it. But I could have declassified it, but I didn't, so now I can't. You're going from one extreme to the other.
Okay, so now here's these photographs that have been shared. About seven, eight of them that I've seen of boxes of documents. One that was shown spilled over and documents on the floor. Already, I've heard someone say that might have been staged. They probably did that on purpose to make it look like. Okay, if so, still the documents are not where they're supposed to be, or you know, they're not protected. All right.
And there was text messages along with the documents that got spilled on the floor by two employees talking back and forth to each other. So how was that staged?
Mm-hmm.
The point is there was a classified top secret document in with the papers that got spilled on the floor.
So there was, I guess as they would say, cross-contamination. So, all right, yeah, there was stuff mixed in with other things. So with this whole thing going on, and you know what, I'm just going to be honest, I'm going to just be open with y'all that are listening, all this stuff is going on, I still don't think that Donald Trump will go to jail. I don't think that's the whole thing, you know, because, you know, if they ever said, Donald J. Trump, you're sentenced to, because if you look at some of these charges carry up to 20 years, you know, 5, 20, you know, many years, you add all that up, he would die in prison. I read what the charges, and they didn't say he's going to get this for you folks to listen. I'm not saying he, you know, I'm not before the horse. I'm just saying that, you know, these people do this type of prosecution and everything every day. And again, no one's above the law. And it tickles me in a sense of where folks say, well, you know, this is unheard of. It looks bad to America, around the world. No, actually, America, for once, should put its foot down and say, hey, look, we don't play. Regardless if you're the president, if you break the law, you break the law.
It looks bad for top secret classified documents that's nuclear on Iran and Iran and different places being at Mar-a-Lago out in the open for anybody to be able to come through and get that information. That's what looked bad. That's what really looked bad.
True, I agree with you. And a lot of these documents were for only certain individuals.
That's right. For your eyes only.
Yep. For your eyes only. Just like the song. For your eyes only. You know, that's from a James Bond movie. But anyway. but yeah, I mean, but some people are like, oh, it's not that serious. Yes, it is. This is very serious.
We had those documents for almost 2 years. Time is best
serious,
not to give them back.
But
it's serious.
What? Again, I'll say that where, you know, I think every politician at some point comes to a crossroads of do right, do wrong. Some pick to do right, some pick to do wrong, and some do a little bit of both. See, there's three. This is a three-way street here now, not a two-way in certain situations. Donald Trump picked to do a little bit of right, a little bit of wrong. Because I did look at some things that I'm just being honest. I'm not one to say he never did anything good. He did a few good things that I say, okay, cool.
What was a good thing? Can you tell me?
Well, when he signed here in Atlanta, I believe it was, I have to look it up again, but I saw where he, when it came to the Martin Luther King Center, and it became a, well, of course, the, hold on, let me see. He signed a document during his presidency. Let me see. I'm trying to find it. Give me a minute, and I'll find it, and I'll come back on it. But he did do something right in that aspect. You know, some folks say, "Oh, that's no big deal," but no, it's cool. You know, but again, if you break the law, regardless. You just can't continue to break the law, continue to bend the law, you know, for what pleases you. Now, here's the thing, Janet, that gets me. He's still the front runner. He's still the front runner for the Republican Party. Even as all this stuff happens, as all this stuff is coming up in real time, because the reason why I think he's going to become even more of a front runner is that the MAGAites, as they call them, or the MAGA, the Donald Trump supporters don't believe any of this. They're saying, Justice Department is making this up. The Justice Department is doing this and that and the other. So, you know, Donald Trump was very good at saying our federal government. You can't trust them and this and the other. This is making most folks think that the federal government is even worse. Our Department of Justice is even worse.
But the things that Donald Trump did, it's documentation. It's not nobody hearsay, she say. It's things that he said out of his mouth made them know that he was obstructing the justice when he was taken in. Documents and hiding them and stuffing them in various places and trying to set people up and telling them not to. He didn't want to give the documents up because he felt like they were his. When did that become yours? You know? And he visited Martin Luther King's grave. But with doing something out, what did he do?
But no, I saw where, well, I'm trying to look for it, but I'm looking at something else too, but I'm going to find it. I just saw, I thought I had it saved.
The statue that they came up with, Martin Luther King and the memorial?
I think that was part of it, right. That's what I was trying to look for. I meant to save it, but he signed off on that. Okay, cool.
He visited the site. He didn't sign off.
He signed something. I know I saw the story the other night, and I pulled it up on my phone. I thought I saved it. He did sign something. He did sign a document. And I'm trying to find out what it was. I saw it now.
The president made the announcement that he was visiting the Washington site of the morning of the holiday dedicated to the civil rights leaders.
That's not what I'm talking about. He signed a document. He signed something, and I have to try to find it. I'm not talking about him visiting something. He did sign on something regarding Dr. King. Still can't find it. Give me a minute because I'm looking at the board. I'm trying to do that, so I'm trying to do a lot up here at the same time. But
here's the thing too, but individuals who are running for office, who are challenging him, these of course are Republicans. Mike Pence, the former vice president, that Donald Trump threw under the bus, is running against him, right? Nikki Haley, who worked in his administration. Tim Scott, who got kind of a grilling on The View. I commend him for having the balls to go on there and try to talk to pretty much a Klan. He never seen racism pretty much growing up in Carolina. Huh? How could you not?
Because I've been in Carolina.
He really experienced it. How could you not? Hell, when I first came to Georgia, I experienced it immediately back in the early 80s. Carolina is not that far away from Georgia.
I don't think there's a cutoff line
of racism between Georgia and Carolina once you cross the border. And back in the 80s, I mean, wow. It was still pretty prevalent here. So how did you not, at your age, never really experience any racism? Black man. But I think I told you the other day, Janet, Go ahead.
I've been to Carolina. I have stood in line, and I've had someone say to the person in back of me, can I help you, to that person, just like I wasn't even standing there. And when I said, excuse me, you don't see me standing here? This is in Florence, South Carolina. The person said, oh, you're not from around here, are you? So what is that telling me? That they overlooked the blacks just to service the white?
They said to you, I'm sorry to interrupt that, but I had to stop you there. They said, oh, you're not from around here. So the person behind you was white, and it was a white person talking to you, right? So when they asked you that, what was your response?
No, I'm not from around here to get service.
And what happened after
because
that?
She waited on me. I could not believe it. I'm standing in line. It was not a short line. And when they got to me, you're going to go look at the person next in back of me asking, can you help them? And I'm supposed to I also experienced people 70 years older talking about ma'am and stuff to somebody 20 years old. Or, you know, I wouldn't be saying yes, sir, no, sir, ma'am, yes, ma'am to somebody a lot younger than me.
True. But here's the thing. Well, I know some people who don't like that term. Some black folks I know will be like, don't call me no ma'am. You know, you probably remember one of our guests that was on the show, Ms. Edna Collison. When I would talk to her on the phone, she'd ask me a question. I said, no, ma'am. She said, Michael, don't call me that. I said, excuse me, but don't call me
but
no ma'am.
But when you see an older black person talking to a young white person and you're giving them the respect, like, you're supposed to give everybody respect because you expect to get respect back. But I would have said yes and no and not, you know, ma'am, yes, sir, you know, to somebody who, you know, it just didn't make sense.
Yeah, because they're teenagers or whatever, and they haven't. Right, I understand where you're going with that. I agree with you. You know, you give respect or you use those terms for elderly people, folks. You know, you give that type of respect. That's a Southern thing. You won't find that out west, but that's a Southern thing. And unfortunately,
or in the North either.
Yeah. You won't find that in those type of cities and everything. But okay, so she did wait on you. I'm just trying to understand the part where she said, you're not from around here. You must not be from around here. That I guess around there, that you have to wait your turn when we get ready to serve you. I guess that's basically what she's trying to say.
A lot of people don't ask a lot of questions. Like when their father was in the hospital, We went down to the minister, the office, the, you know, financial office, and I started asking a lot of questions about the bill and, you know, different things. And she also said the same thing. Oh, I guess because of my accent, I don't know what it was, but she automatically said, "Oh, you're not from here, right?" Mhm. And my relatives weren't even asking the doctors what was going on. They thought that my sister-in-law thought her father had a stroke. He had terminal cancer. You're not even asking the right questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You just assumed, you know, I mean, it was just backwards. I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm. So let's go back to this. Let's go back to this here real quick. Because we wanted to go ahead and get into this about the indictment and the, I mean, again, this is unprecedented. This has never happened in U.S. history. A lot of folks
are
surprised. It never happened, okay, to any president. Now, there were some presidents who could have gone to jail, who could have been in the situation, but they dodged the bullet. Nixon is one. Nixon resigned. And then he was
pardoned.
So did
Bill Agnew, his vice president, to keep him going
mm-hmm.
to jail.
To keep from going to jail. Should Trump have, in your opinion, let's say you're a Republican, okay, should Trump have tried to just say, you know what, I'm not going to deal with this crap. I'm just going to, you know, just stop trying to, you know, be a president again and everything. Early on, should he have done the same route that Nixon did to avoid that and hopefully get pardoned by the next president, or you know what I'm saying, and everything. But I heard an individual say, well, Trump's a fighter. He's going to keep fighting this. Well, fighters lose sometimes. You know, he lost.
But if you want
in the
to be a fighter, don't be
he
doing
lost.
Something wrong.
Well, he tried to fight when he was him and his father for their practices as far as labor goes, as far as when they weren't paying the, you know, when they did the casinos, the contractors did not get paid, which in turn the workers did not get paid, you know, and they were found guilty of that, correct? So, and it's, it's documented.
Donald
so
Trump filed bankrupt. He wouldn't pay the contractors.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he wouldn't pay the contractors. Okay, so right there, that should tell anybody that, hey, look, this cat could probably do something and it's not legal, whatever. And once they're found guilty of that crime, they're capable of committing another crime. They say that about anybody else, any everyday citizen. They're capable of doing it again. You know, they say that folks who commit a crime, go to prison, get out, and they might commit again. We try to help them so they don't do it again. They do it again. Well, same thing in business. A person like a Donald Trump, you know, could commit a crime, be like, okay, cool, I'm guilty. Next.
You know what I feel like the crime Donald Trump is committing? Having all these fundraisers for self-worth, not for, you know, it's for him. It's for, it, you know, and people are feeding and falling for it. They're just constantly sending the money. You know, every time something happens, send more money, you know. Mm-hmm. But what are you doing for the people? You didn't do anything for the people.
That's an interesting point, because now that's what they're doing. They're asking people who have no money to send money.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
They're asking their supporters,
Grifter,
help us fight this. This guy would not release
his tax return information. So why would you even send $5? Why?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you even send $5 for a person who already has been found guilty of other charges in the past, well, is dealing with three different accusations that are you know, are coming to the forefront.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? A parent will, I want to say this. A parent will only defend their child for so long. They will bail them out. They will put money on their books. And once they get out and they reoffend again, a parent will be like, no, I'm not doing this anymore. Hell, I'm going in debt. I know this one girl or this one family, their daughter was in trouble with the law. They put their house up for the bail. Lost their house.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you're going to, if this individual who's supposed to be a billionaire, I don't know how much money Donald Trump has. I really don't know. I don't know anybody knows but Donald Trump and his family, his immediate folks and his lawyers. But once he gets in trouble, you would think that he should be able to fund it himself if he's a billionaire.
What has he funded since he's been out of the White House? What has he funded since he's been out of the White House? He's been getting money from people, raising funds.
Yeah, I don't know if anything.
And if Trump didn't want to be in trouble, the archives shouldn't have had to, for over a year and a half, beg and plead for documents that he wouldn't give up.
Right.
You know?
And that goes back to obstruction.
You brought that on yourself.
Yeah, it goes back to obstruction. They knew he had them. You know, they already knew he had those documents. But for you to claim you don't have them, you know, and then ship them around and this, that, and the other. All that BS that happened, that's what brought the obstruction charges. You can't compare that to, which I'm saying to other folks, not you, but the other folks, when they say, oh, that's not fair. You know, they didn't do the same thing to Pence or to Biden. Pence and Biden did not sit up and say, no, well, I ain't got them, or ship them around or try to hide them.
I'm not giving them back.
That's what's called obstruction of justice. You know, people get arrested every day on the side of the road when they get pulled over. And the officer says, well, you obstructed. Well, you're calling it obstruction because you're trying to violate my rights. I don't have to do this. I don't have to do that. The Supreme Court says that. If you're pulling me over for a traffic violation, write me the ticket and let me go about my way. I'll pay it or go to court. But when you start saying, oh, I smelled some marijuana in the car, I think I'm going to bring the dog. I need you to step out. No, now you're violating my rights because there's no scent of marijuana. There's whatsoever. And then, again, here's what I'm looking at is where these counties and these states need to look at the thousands and thousands and even up into millions of dollars that are paid out to private citizens whose rights are violated every day. And I say that because as president of the United States, Donald Trump, you know, to again, as you said about, you know, obstruction. They knew he had the documents, and all they did was say, hey, can you hand them over? I ain't got those. So you hand over a few. Then they go back and they check and be like, no, you got a little bit more than that, Donald. No, I don't. Come to find out, yes, you do. That's obstruction all day long.
He said they were his, and he didn't have to give them up. He said he had to declassify.
There's a process. There's a process,
that's
correct?
Right.
There's a process.
Yes, it is.
That every president should have gone through. Again, Biden had some. Pence had some.
But you have to take into consideration that Biden was in 8 years in office with Obama, and then 2 years being in there as president of the United States. And it was an office that he was not using. And when they found when they were closing shop on that office and found the documents, they notified the DOJ right away. It wasn't like they were trying to hide something. They could have tore them up and threw them away, but they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So they did the right thing.
You know, they could have tried to flush them down the toilet. You know, anything.
That's right.
Right. They could have tried that. But see, and that's the thing, you know, that when I listen to people, as Donald Trump will say, on both sides. You know, I mean, I listen to the Democrats, I listen to Republicans, but, you know, the law is the law. You can't sit up here and tell a lie to cover another lie and then expect everyone to believe the first lie when the second one exposed you.
Mm-hmm.
It exposed you. It doesn't make any sense. Now, had Donald Trump, I mean, in all fairness, had he, you know, said, yeah, I got them, and I felt like they were mine, and I could do them, but here you go. You can have them. He could have ran off copies, whatever he wanted to do. What was his intentions is my question. I haven't heard anybody question.
And for
the
documents to be out in the open for anybody to be able to access them, it wasn't like they were locked up. You know, this was our national security, ours and other countries, out exposed. You know, there was twice people came that were spies through the Mar-a-Lago. How many others came mm-hmm. through that they're not even aware of? And another thing, this is me.
Oh.
This is me. This
mm-hmm.
is what my theory. Before Trump left office, he owed all these countries money. And he was trying to stay in office so he wouldn't have to pay up. All those things were coming due. All the things, the money he owed. Russia, different countries, Saudi Arabia.
Right.
You notice they didn't say anything else about that after he left the White House?
I'm looking at the, right, and you're right. But let me go ahead and I'm looking at the chat room here. I see Sarge 1C, I believe that's right. This is what Sarge 1C has posted. It says, the Presidential Records Act is a civil legal mechanism for negotiations between a former POTUS and the National Archivist for the return of for the return of documents that archivists, right? Archivists.
Mm-hmm.
ARCHIVISP.
Archivists.
That's what I said. Archivists. Things
mm-hmm.
should be in archives custody. If an agreement cannot be reached, then the matter is to be submitted to a federal court for resolution to include court-ordered subpoena. This part
mm-hmm.
was never accomplished before the Mar-a-Lago raid. Correct. Thank you, Sarge.
They had to get a subpoena in order to go get the documents from Mar-a-Lago raid. They had a subpoena from the court.
Right. And no, what I'm saying is that I think what Sarge is saying is that the matter is to be submitted to a federal court for resolution. It never was. To include court-ordered subpoena. This part was never accomplished.
They got a court-ordered subpoena. How did they get the subpoena? They didn't just go there. They had a subpoena. They went before the court to get a subpoena.
No, what I'm saying is that where I think, let me let Sarge 1C respond to what they posted, because I'm thinking they're saying this part was never accomplished before the Mar-a-Lago raid, meaning that if an agreement cannot be reached, then the matter is to be submitted to a federal court for a resolution to include court-ordered subpoena. This part was never accomplished before. Okay, so Sard, are you saying that they never did ask for a court to get involved? They just raided. Is that what you're saying? So here's Sarge's response. I have read the indictment. Count 1 through 31 of the document involve violations of 18 U.S.C. Section 793. This law is predicated on the documents in question being lawfully possessed but mishandled while in lawful possession. So you're saying that the president, the former president, lawfully had these documents but mishandled. I think that's what Sarge is saying. How was it lawfully possessed, though? Okay. And Sarge, you're welcome to call in if you'd like to talk. Let me say this. Sarge 1C, go by that name. You're welcome to call in and talk to us. You don't have to type onto the computer, but that's up to you. The number is 516-531-9861. That's 516-531-9861. Okay. But the thing is, again, I go back to this, is that when documents are missing, okay, and they question you about it and you deny having them, and you're the only president who says, oh, I can, you know, I can sit up here and say, hey, look, I can disclassify anything at any moment. At any moment, anything? I've never heard that. I didn't know that was possible. Okay, bring it, boy. Thank you for joining in here in the chat room. Search warrant. Hello, Mr. Gay, and to Ms. Finn. Hey, bring it, boy. But I've never known any other president to do that. I do know that, which we just talked about, that Pence had documents, Biden had documents. We already talked about the fact that they turned them over without any kind of issue. They're like, oh, here you go. And as Janet just said, that there was an office that Biden had, hadn't been there for years, wasn't aware of what was there, turned them over. Didn't say, I can keep these. So that's interesting. Oh, my goodness, I got a stupid squirrel. Janet, wait a minute. We got a secret squirrel here. You know what a secret squirrel is, right?
Yeah, I know the secret squirrel, but I want to read something.
Yeah, go ahead.
The Justice Department issued a subpoena for additional records for the FBI agents to go to Mar-a-Lago to collect the additional material offered by Trump attorneys in response to a subpoena. They didn't just go there and get documents. They had to get a subpoena. And they had nicely for a long time kept asking for the documents, even the archives. And then they went to the DOJ when they couldn't get anywhere.
Well, you're right, and I'm aware of that, and I think that that's where there's some kind of confusion of the timing of it, I guess. But I guess they asked, didn't get a response, got a denial, this, that, and the other, and then finally they had to do what they had to do. I'm looking at this secret squirrel here. A 111 number. I'm going to open up their mic, Janet. Let's see.
But if
secret squirrel, your mic is open. Let me see who's calling. What is your name? Okay, hold on.
Actually,
what is your name?
It's not a secret squirrel. It's Sarge calling from his Skype number, which always dials that way. So I'm not actually a secret squirrel.
Well, I still call it a secret squirrel when I see 11111. That's always the way we address a 111 number, but thank you for calling in, Sarge. How are you today?
Yes, I'm very good, and I'm enjoying listening to the conversation. I think it raises a number of substantive issues that definitely need addressing. And certainly there was a subpoena issued for the documents in question in the Mar-a-Lago raid, issued by a federal magistrate outside of the auspices of the Presidential Record Act, because the Department of Justice concocted an emergency in which they said they had to get those documents immediately. And so the federal magistrate issued not only the subpoena, but a search warrant so they could go there with the documents in question being subpoenaed with the search warrant. So it was not done under the auspices of the Presidential Record Act, which carries no criminal penalties and is not a criminal statute.
Okay, but let me ask you this. You said that they said they wanted that immediately. Why would you think they want them back immediately? I mean, because we already know. Hold on just a second. I'm going to pass you the mic. Because they must have been worried about Donald Trump having these documents for a long period of time. They must have been worried. They must have been concerned. You could use anything. I mean, and they want them back. So they did do what they were supposed to do, but then, they went to Mar-a-Lago to retrieve them, and they did not get them, all of them, immediately, right? They had to ask again for more, correct? So why do you think they were so concerned about Donald Trump having these documents?
Well, I can't be for 100% absolutely certain, but I say I'm about 95% certain, and that is because Donald Trump represents an existential threat to the bureaucratic deep state that is running the Biden administration, because he has absolutely no control over it. He is being manipulated by people, long-term bureaucrats in the deep state, in the FBI, in the CIA, in the NSA, in the State Department, all throughout, who are actually running this country, and Donald Trump represents an existential threat to that entity, and with that in mind, he was taking documents, particularly those that involve Operation Crossfire Hurricane, that they were very, very worried about. But there's I have an even more direct point about the Jack Smith and the special counsel is doing, because they ran headfirst into Article 2, Section 1 of the United States Constitution, which says quite specifically whether it is Donald Trump or the potato head corruptocrat in the office right now, it doesn't matter. Article 1, Section 8 gives these powers to the president. It's very simple. It's one sentence. Article 2, Section 1. Executive power shall be vested in a singular president of the United States of America. Now, note, it's not with the executive branch agencies, because their authority originates from the president. But what we're getting now is we are witnessing the executive branch assuming the authority of the president without the president's imprimatur. That's what we're witnessing right in front of our eyes in live time. And here's the problem that Jack Smith ran into when he did what he's doing. They're trying to jam a legal lawfare peg, a square legal lawfare peg, into a constitutional round hole. And that's why they went not with mishandling classified documents. That's why we went with a violation of this. The first 31 counts or 37 counts are violations of Article Chapter 18, United States Code 793. That was a law created in 1948 arising out of concerns involving contractors for the Defense Department who might steal, sell, or copy defense secrets or patents on defense products.
Hold on, Sarge. I got to put you on pause for a second. Because you're running out of stuff here. But the thing is that where I have to stop, that's what I do. I have to stop and address some of the things that you said. Okay? And I want my co-host to be able to do so. But here's the thing that I'm looking at. I asked you a question about why do you think they immediately went after Donald Trump to retrieve these documents and everything. Let's look at Donald Trump's past, okay? Let's look at the fact that, North Korea, you know, Jung Il, I mean, he wrote me a beautiful letter, nice letter. Putin, I don't think he had anything to do with this. Okay, no president. Now, I know that you might say this has nothing to do with Donald Trump, but no president has ever said what he said about America's Nemesis. No president. You look at where he sit up here and he was talking to Russian individuals and everything and talking about a bunch of stuff that no president has ever done openly. So to me, that was the concern. And keep in mind that Donald Trump has interest in a lot of different countries prior to being the president. So wouldn't you say that should cause concern of U.S. documents that say for your eyes only, that only certain individuals should be able to see them? And are you telling me that the process, that when it comes to the process of certain documents, that it should not go through what was normally done? I mean, Donald Trump had flipped the script and said, hey, look, y'all don't have to see my tax returns. You ain't got to see nothing about me, my personal life and everything. He's the only president who did that since it started. So you have no concern of an individual having top secret stuff in their home. You are not worried. And a person who is so chummy with individuals who have been our nemesis for decades, you don't have a problem with that?
I have many concerns and many problems involving the chief executive of the United States, no matter who it is. However,
I'm talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about the one who right now has all these indictments falling on him left and right, and even the Republican Party, members of the Republican Party, some are saying, hey, look, that this we should not have him as the representative for the Republican Party in this next election.
Everyone is entitled to their opinion, but what they're not entitled to is the reach and the powers granted to the chief executive officer of the federal branch of the government by the United States Constitution. The United States Supreme Court has ruled in 1988, Department of the Navy versus Egan, that that the declassification authority of the president is plenary, almost total. So it means that no matter what our concerns may be or not be, the president has the authority to classify any material he deems suitable to be declassified, period. They said it explicitly. And he was president up until noon on January 20th of 2021, and he wrote a letter to the Federal Registry on January 19th, 2021, saying that he was declassifying all of the Crossfire Hurricane documents. It's right there in the Federal Registry with his signature on it. So his power to declassify is total. They're not arguing that he was in unlawful possession of the class. Read the indictment. They're not arguing that. What they are doing now is they are folding these documents. They are claiming that they are defense documents with defense information on them. So therefore, he's committing a violation of Chapter 18, Section 793. They couldn't get him under classified information. He's got the power to do it, and they know it. That's why they didn't try to do that. They're trying to say they're defense documents, and that's how they can do this. And the rest of it, all of the other counts, are process crimes arriving out of an illegitimate investigation and raid, just like they did with Michael Flynn, just like they did with Roger Stone, just like they did with Steve Bannon, just like they did with everyone else. Heck, they even took his attorneys and compelled his attorneys to testify against him on the basis of the fraud and criminal activity exception. That also is singularly unprecedented. I am so worried about so many more things than a letter about a North Korean leader, no matter how corrupt and dangerous he may be, than I am about a president who has now been implicated on the same day this indictment was announced in taking $15 million in bribes from an adversarial government that is the second leading world power in the world. $15 million with solid evidence of it. They've had the evidence for 4 years now. They haven't done a thing about it, and they put this case together in 4 months.
Okay, so I want you to hold tight for a minute, okay? Because we try to have a conversation, all right? I let you rant about and say what you wanted to say, and I appreciate that. But take a breath for a minute, sir. Appreciate you chiming in, but people do have a response. So, Janet, based on what Sarge has said, I want to hear what your thoughts are. What Sarge has said.
I've been following this even before the indictment for Trump, but I've been following politics for years, and
okay.
I have never seen anybody do the things that President Trump has done. He's no longer president of the United States. So therefore, you only have one person that's supposed to be our leader at a certain particular time. So Biden is in office. I guess he's supposed to be still legitimate. Biden is in office. He's supposed to be the president. And Biden said he was being honest and he was letting the Justice Department take care of whatever they needed to do. He was not going to be in charge of it. And people are still trying to say it's all because of Biden, because Biden is the president. It's all because of Garland,
okay.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And there,
okay,
and if you read all the charges, I thought it was in there about obstruction. I'm not talking about the first 31. I'm talking about the other ones, because he did have stuff that he shouldn't have had. And it was not, it was also information on other countries. It wasn't just stuff for the United States that Trump had. Why did he need that?
But see, here's what I'm looking at it that way. You know, I'm just amused at the fact that If you're breaking the law, you're breaking the law. Okay, obviously,
amen.
You have to investigate. Now, a lot of people, let me finish. A lot of people are saying, well, if they did this to Trump, how come they're not doing this to Biden? How come they're not doing this to Hunter Biden? How come they did not do this towards Hillary Clinton and everything? Let's look at what the whole
they
setup was
Hillary Clinton.
At that time. During those investigations, there are some that did not, you know, that did not come about. All right? Let's take a look at it.
Trump investigated Hillary Clinton. Nothing came. Bosch investigated. Nothing came about that.
Janet, hold on a minute. So I think what I'm hearing is a lot of people are saying that Donald Trump is not given a fair hand based on these other allegations of Biden, Clinton, and Hunter Biden. That's what I'm hearing. How come they're not being investigated? How come this is not being done in everything?
But, Michael, Republicans investigated Hunter Biden, and they investigated Hillary Clinton, and they went and looked at the stuff for Biden that did something over in Ukraine or whatever. They didn't find anything. People that Barr put in place.
And let me intervene for a minute here. So, Sarge, that's the thing, what Janet just said. There were investigations from the Republican side and everything. There were votes on this, votes on that. There were investigations on that, and they were shot down. They were not, you know, I mean, and the Republicans were in charge.
There has not been a single grand jury convened with regard to the evidence that is on Hunter Biden's laptop, not one in 4 years. Not one grand jury has been convened on any of that evidence. None of the evidence involved in the business associates testifying under oath to congressional committees about Hunter and Joe Biden's involvement in pay-to-play schemes all throughout the world, in Ukraine, in China, and elsewhere, in Kazakhstan. There's not been one single grand jury convened to investigate any of that. And now the Congressional Committee, on the very day they announced the indictment of Donald Trump, being threatened with contempt of Congress, citation Congress, on that very same day, Christopher Wray decided to release the form 1023, which indicates the pay-to-play scheme outlined under oath by a reliable whistleblower undercover informant the FBI is paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to for years. He announced in great detail, Mitch McConnell says he's read it, Marjorie Taylor Greene says she's read it, James Comer says he's read it, they've all read it. It details all of these things we are saying that the Biden administration is doing with regard to selling their office to adversarial powers for money, millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So the very day that we're to get this in detail, the indictment dropped. Gee, what a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
The indictment dropped because they were trying to put Christopher Wray in contempt for not letting him get a copy of the document.
Why was
he
withholding the document under the subpoena, which wasn't even classified? They didn't say it was a classified document. They said it was simply to protect their sources and methods, of which Congress has the right to oversee. That's in the Constitution. The FBI isn't in the Constitution.
The
Congressional Oversight Authority is in the Constitution.
Okay, so here's the thing that comes to my mind. You know,
Biden,
you got
been 2000, president for 2 years.
Excuse me. Let me say something. Here's the thing that comes to my mind, and to me is comical, because it's like children. Well, he hit me first. I didn't lie. He lied. Okay, so let's say Biden, if this is the case, Biden's going to run for president again. Donald Trump is running for president again. A bunch of other individuals, like I said, in the Republican Party, the field is growing and growing. And like I said earlier in the show, there's individuals, I know they know they're not going to win. You know it. But they're running because if Donald Trump, and depending on how long this runs, as far as this indictment, if it's not resolved before the election, Donald Trump could probably be president again. That's a reality. And I think many of these individuals would love to be the vice president and hope that he picks them. That's what I'm thinking. But still, again, I mean, if Biden did something wrong and everything, yes, there should be. I'm not saying it should be just a Republican or Donald Trump. There should be an investigation. There should be a grand jury to investigate any president. Nobody is above the law. But
yeah,
still, and again, the ball is in Donald Trump's court. The ball is in his court. Now, two of his lawyers just quit. Once the indictments came out, two of his lawyers quit.
They were the ones that were compelled to testify against Donald Trump, so that's why they quit. They had a conflict of interest. They had to.
They had to?
Yes, they were compelled to testify by the special counsel.
Okay.
So they had to quit because they were now, if they continue to represent Donald Trump, seeing as how they now could be witnesses subpoenaed by the special counsel, their continued representation of Donald Trump would be a conflict of interest. They had to quit.
Mm-hmm. He's running out of lawyers, Sarge. He's running out of lawyers, though, right? Isn't he?
That's
He's running
story.
Out of lawyers.
Well, that's
no,
another
but he
story.
Is running
I don't
out of lawyers.
I don't have any problem getting lawyers. I really don't. I don't think he's going to have any trouble whatsoever getting the very best lawyers to represent him. Trust me on this. But look, there's something else I think we need to bring up with regard to them using this particular statute in order to go after Trump on the criminal matters involving mishandling information. Now,
mm-hmm.
If you will recall during the preliminary motions in the Mar-a-Lago case, when the attorneys were making the preliminary motions, they were asking for the appointment of a special master to review the documents. Remember that?
Right.
Remember that? Remember that big controversy about the special master and all that?
Mm-hmm.
And eventually a Florida federal judge said that there could be she was going to allow a special master to be appointed to review the documents. And the Department of Justice went to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals to appeal it because they didn't want a special master to review what documents would be considered appropriate for review or exclusion. So what happened was they got the 11th Circuit to issue a ruling, and that 11th Circuit ruling was very curious because I'm looking at page 25 of the opinion of the court, and it says this: when matters of national security are involved, we must accord substantial weight to an agency's affidavit. And furthermore, the ingrained principle that courts must exercise the traditional reluctance to intrude upon the authority of the executive in military and national security affairs guides our review of the United States' proper national security concerns. So therefore, they overruled the federal judge and allowed and did not allow the appointment of a special master. Now, why is this significant?
I thought it was a special master, but he said that he was not qualified to look at some of those documents.
No, ma'am, that's not at all the reason. No, ma'am, read the opinion of the court. I'm imploring you to read the opinion of the court. Read it. The 11th Circuit had the final say in it. And I'm reading from their opinion. The reason the special master was not allowed is because the 11th Circuit said we are deferring to the Department of Justice in this matter, in which they claim is a national security and national defense matter. That's why there was no special master.
And the judges in the circuit court were appointed Republican judges.
I'm sorry, but those details have no bearing on what is happening with the case and why things are unfolding the way they're unfolding. And the reason I'm bringing this up, because it established the predicate to charge the president under this current statute. That ruling by the 11th Circuit Court giving deference to the executive branch is what gave Jack Smith the go-ahead to now forget about classified documents. This doesn't have anything to do with classified documents directly. They understand he lawfully possesses them. They are saying he has mishandled them by allowing people without the appropriate security clearance and whatnot to see them. That's what they're saying. And they're now changing their tack because of this ruling by the 11th Circuit, which enabled them to use 793, which is intended originally to apply to defense contractors, not the President of the United States. I mean, a thoroughly corrupt investigation ruling, and all the jurisprudence arising from it appears to be corrupt. It's like the fruit of the poisonous tree. I don't know if you're familiar with that doctrine or not, but the fruit of the poisonous tree is that when you get an illegal search warrant, everything that follows from it can be pretty much thrown out.
So since we're talking about courts and everything, I'm sure all of you are aware that the judge to oversee this case is a Trump appointee, okay? And let me just read this out real quick. This is from NPR. I always try to share where I get this information from. You can go back and look at this or look at something else and share your thoughts. U.S. District Judge Aileen Cannon, has been assigned, at least for now, to oversee the case stemming from Donald Trump's indictment. A source confirmed to NPR. Trump appointed Cannon to the bench in 2020, and she is the same judge who ruled in favor of Trump's request to appoint a special master to review documents seized by the FBI from Mar-a-Lago last summer, a move that temporarily stopped federal prosecutors from continuing their investigation into the documents. The ruling sparked pushback from the Justice Department, which argued that the appointment would significantly harm important governmental interests, including national security interests. It goes on to say, Cannon also ruled to unseal a list of items the FBI seized from their search of Trump's home. If Trump is convicted and Cannon remains on the case, she would be responsible for determining the sentence, including any prison time. The attorneys who have been working with Trump on the case, Jim Trusty and John Rowley, resigned from representing him Friday morning as part of the fallout from his indictment by a federal grand jury. So now, let's look at that. Here's a Trump appointee. And I do believe there's going to be a lot of issues before this case is done. From the Democrats,
Well, I don't intend to try to dismiss observations about who appointed whom and who might have allegiances or loyalties to the person who got them in the job and all of that. I understand
that's a possibility, I'm saying that where I believe that that might be a possibility, you know, because for the fact that, I mean, you know, every president can appoint a vacant seat in a court or whatever, a Supreme Court justice. Every president can pick who they want, and they're going to pick from their party. The thing is that what I just read just clearly states it's not a Democrat. It's going to be a Republican appointed judge.
And I understand that. I understand that. I'm not, as I said, I'm not dismissing it because I'm sure.
Excuse me, sir. From the defendant. So I'm pretty sure, and I hope, well, I'm not going to hope. I'm going to say that anyone would agree that that's going to be a questionable situation of how she handles this case moving forward. Because he gave her her lifetime job. Correct?
Yes, and again, that's why I'm saying I'm not all dismissing it out of hand altogether. I'm not, because I understand human nature and things like that and the way it works. Human nature does not obviate necessarily your oath of office or what you take an oath to do, which to apply the law faithfully, fairly, and objectively. Now, the question is not whether he's supposed to, and I understand the impulse not to, but she is supposed to apply the law as it comes in front of her. She's not supposed to favor Trump or the prosecution. She's supposed to favor the law, the Constitution, first of all, supreme law of the land's Constitution, number two, the statute law, and number three, legal precedent. Those are the things that are supposed to bind her as a judge. Now, the question is, does she have the integrity to stick to that? If she does, then whatever she rules, if she's doing it within that context, I'm going to be fine with it. If she doesn't, I'm going to be against her. And I think everyone should be.
Okay. So that's how come I read that. And that's where I find it so interesting, is that where it is a person that it's not about, you know, them being a chief justice who's been elected by a Democrat or Republican. It's a chief justice who was elected or who was given the position by the defendant. That's what's so interesting to me. So, you know, and it goes back to what you said, you know, would there be some favoritism? You know, would she look at it? Is she capable? Is she capable of saying, hey, you know, I know you gave me my job, but hey, I got to follow the rules. So we have to see how this goes. You know,
well,
everybody
she's not
is jumping
capable
to
of, she should recuse herself from the case. If she's not capable of doing that, she ought to have the ethical decency to recuse herself from the case.
Right,
well,
because
you know
the
what?
First two times she was showing favoritism.
What was that, Janet?
I said the first two times she was first. A point representing Trump, she was showing favoritism to her on purpose. And that's why things got overturned by the circuit court because of I need to see that information where you got
Here's where you go to get it. You go to get to, let me see here. You go to the 11th Circuit Court, their docket case. And I had the docket number. I don't have it with me right now. Let's see. It's from, I'll give you the docket number. Oh, yes, 22-13005. And it's on page 25. If you want to go look that up, go look up the 11th Circuit Court ruling. You'll see it has nothing to do with their concerns about the ethics of the judge. So that's why they didn't get a special master. But look, here's what I'm saying. This is the main point I'm trying to say. Based on everything I got to say, the main point I'm going to say is once they establish that legal beachhead that allowed them to frame this within the meaning or crime within the meaning of Chapter 18, Section 793, then it is a relatively simple matter to fold all manners of process crimes within this indictment, like obstruction, making false statements to investigators, concealing evidence, and the like they did with George Papadopoulos, Roger Stone, Steve Bannon, and General Michael Flynn. And again, and remember, they forced Trump's attorney to testify against them. They compelled him to. So that's why they had to quit. So all of these things are legally so suspect. They have criminalized a document case under the Presidential Records Act. That's what all of this is originating from. They did not allow the Presidential Records Act process to play out, and they used all of it as a fig leaf to raid Mar-a-Lago. Now, once they've got this beachhead established, you can see they're fanning out and doing what they're doing. And it doesn't fool anybody who knows this department, what the FBI was doing with the Russia hoax, what they did with the phony FISA warrants renewed four times. FISA warrants are the strictest of warrants to obtain, and they admitted that the evidence they used to obtain the FISA warrants was not corroborated. That alone should have got somebody indicted for doing so. I mean, they've done so many dirty rotten things. Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Andrew Weissman, all of those people clearly implicated in bias and in using a corrupted sources. Christopher Steele himself, the guy who created the Russia dossier document, said he could not corroborate the evidence in that document. They paid him $1 million. They were willing to pay $1 million if he could. And he couldn't. And he told them that. And they shopped that dossier around so they can then leak it to the press to obtain more verification once the press started reporting, to get more warrants on an endless feedback loop of corruption. No, I don't trust the FBI, nor the Department of Justice. Its track record is abominable.
And I don't trust any of the people that you just got through listing. You know, Roger Stone was in the closet talking about selling pardons for $2 million.
Well, again, we agree. Well, we don't know who they are yet. I mean, they haven't come forward to identify themselves yet.
I want you guys to finish up your last thoughts about this, because we do have other topics I definitely want us to talk about. We've gone 30 minutes over because it's supposed to have been only an hour on this whole topic. But it's cool. I might extend the show for another 15 minutes if necessary. I want to go ahead. And again, I want to say thanks to Sarge for calling in, and appreciate your comment. I'm open to listen to everybody. That's what we do. We're an open platform. Hear your point of view and your opinions on things that we discuss here on the show. So real quick, just a minute, what is your final thoughts or your final thing you want to share with us?
Well, again, you know, we got to let the process play out. Now that we have the indictment, we can see a lot more about the play here. I think we're going to let the process play out. I think we should all agree this is singularly unprecedented. And given what has gone before us that was completely ignored by the Department of Justice with Hillary Clinton and with Joe Biden as we currently speak, I should think we should all agree that this is at the very least, in the manner in which it's being prosecuted, troubling.
Okay. Yeah, it's troubling, period, regardless if it was a Republican or a Democrat. If the script was flipped and it was a Democrat, I think the Republicans would have came at Joe Biden as vigorously as they're going after Donald Trump. It doesn't matter. Every party is going to always go against the other party and try to expose everything possible and try to, you know, do what they feel is right. But, you know, again, I say, no one is above the law. Janet Davis, your final thoughts on this topic.
I have no final thoughts.
You don't? Okay. All right. Real quick, we're going to go ahead and do this quick drop, and then we're going to come back with our next topic or our next conversation. Wow. You know, I don't even want to try to introduce this yet. Let me do this drop, and we'll come back, and we'll get to it.
What's up, y'all? This is St. James, and you're listening to TMGS, The Michael Gay Show. Tune in every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for interesting topics and awesome music. Now back to the show.
Hey, this is Cheryl Cooley of the all-female band Climax, and you're listening to The Michael Gay Show. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you, St. James. I don't know how often you guys see local news or read stories. You know, we've seen the stand your ground situation for years. A lot of people didn't know that law existed in many states. We were surprisingly introduced to stand your ground due to the murder, and I still call it the murder, of Trayvon Martin. Well, just recently, there was another one, And there's two stories here I want to share with you guys. And unfortunately, these stories are not talked about. They should. Yes, we're talking politics right now. We're talking about what's happening with Donald Trump, so-called billionaire, and this and that and the other. But we're forgetting the lives that are lost every day here in America due to a law I think should not exist, because people are taking advantage of it and think that they're able to kill somebody and claim that, oh, well, I felt like my life was in danger. You hear that all the time. Makes no sense, you guys. So here, I'm going to give you the story here. And it seems like we're becoming very immune to these stories. Bond set at $154,000 for Florida woman arrested in the shooting death of a black mother who knocked on her door. Bond for the Florida woman charged with manslaughter, keep that word in mind, manslaughter, in the shooting death of her neighbor, a black mother, who confronted her during a dispute over children playing outside, was set at $154,000 on Friday. A judge set a bond at $150,000 for felony charge and another $4,000 for four misdemeanor counts for Susan Louise Lawrence, L-O-R-I-N-C-Z. So I'm just guessing the pronunciation, but who earlier told the court she could only afford a bond of $1,700. She also said she is unemployed and owns about $3,000 worth of furniture. The state requested a $200,000 bond. The owner of the apartment where Lewinges lives told detectives she was being evicted, according to a prosecutor, and the judge recommended Lawrence not return there. Lawrence was arrested Tuesday, and give me a minute here to finish it up because something happened to my phone. Okay, was arrested Tuesday, four days after investigators say she fatally shot a Jeek known as AJ Owens through the front door of her home near Ocala, Florida. As Owens repeatedly knocked on her door, Marion County Sheriff said. Owens was demanding that Lawrence come out of her apartment after the 58-year-old white woman had yelled at Owens' children and thrown a roller skate at her 10-year-old son, hitting him, the sheriff said. In addition to manslaughter with a firearm, Lawrence is facing charges of culpable negligence, battery, and two counts of assault. If Lawrence posts bond, she will not be allowed to possess a firearm and so on and so forth. Lawrence made an initial court appearance via video call on Tuesday. She told the court she has no savings and is making payments on a car and had filed for a disability after working at United Healthcare. She said she last worked 2 weeks ago and that she supports her 55-year-old sister. All right, so with that being said, so here's the issue. According to the story that the kids were playing, this and the other, they got into an argument. Kids were arguing with this woman who lives next door. She throws a skate. The mother goes next door, knocks on the door. She didn't push the door open. She didn't grab the knob and walk inside. She knocks on the door. And this woman shoots through the door, killing the mother in front of her child. Now, she, in another story or another article I read, she claimed she was standing her ground. How are you standing your ground and there's a door between the outside world and yourself? I mean, many people can knock on your door. I don't know of people who automatically grab a gun and just shoots through the door in fear of their life. You breaking my window and trying to climb inside my house, well, then, yeah. But someone's knocking on your door. Keep in mind where I read that it took a few days for them to arrest this woman. And this happened in Florida. Took a few days. And this child witnessed their mother fall to the ground and die. Janet, what's your thought on this? Because to me, this is has been out of hand with this excuse, I feared for my life. And keep in mind also, a lot of these situations, the victim never had a weapon, not a gun, not a knife, not a hammer, nothing. There was never one found near her body.
I think it's a terrible thing for somebody to shoot through the door and say that they were in fear of their life. You know, I could see it if it was an altercation where they were fighting, but this feud had been going on for the longest. And other neighbors is saying how this woman was always harassing the children. It was an apartment complex. She did not own property. So how can you tell somebody where they can play? They played in the field between two apartment complexes.
Mm-hmm.
And she constantly harassed the children. Other neighbors.
And it's not her part. Right. Okay. And you're right. Now, here's the thing. She didn't own the property. She was a renter. She was being evicted. So it's not her private property. You can't get mad at children playing in a field next door to property that's, let alone not yours, but it's not even your landlord's. Possibly the landlord might have owned the field.
Names. Constantly calling the children racist names.
Yeah, I read that in another story, and you guys can look it up, because to me, this is what's really sad. I mean, we can debate about politics and everything, which is good to talk about, but this is the stuff that goes on, and many of us don't even know about. People are being murdered every day based on laws that politicians put in place. That's what's sad. And this woman was murdered. Here we go. In fact, I want to see if Sarge has something to say about this case. Sarge is still here. What's your thoughts about this?
Oh, do I ever have something to say about this one? Now, the reason I have something to say about it, I think, and I have some basis of knowledge to talk about it, is because back in 2005, during the height of the Trayvon Martin fervor, I debated the chief of detectives for Washington, D.C., the former homicide chief detective named Wendell Watkins on Blog Talk. I'll even put the link into it if you care to hear it. I came on to a show at about the hour mark, and we had a debate. And he was of the belief that George Zimmerman had committed a crime in shooting Trayvon Martin. By the end of the show, I convinced him otherwise. And so in order to debate, you can listen for yourself and you make your own decision.
Please share.
Reason I knew this is because I researched thoroughly the law in Florida on use of deadly force. And that comes from Title 46, Chapter 776, Justifiable Use of Force. And it's very clear. And it starts off, the section, the requisite section involving this woman, is 776.013, home protection, use of threat and use of deadly force, presumption of fear of death or great bodily harm. The very first section of the law starts off with this wording. A person who is in a dwelling or residence in which the person has a right to be has no duty to retreat and has the right to stand his or her ground and use or threaten to use. And then they go on to various categories of the force they're allowed to do. Now, in this case, that would be section number one. That would be, rather, section number B, which is deadly force if, and this is going to be what's going to be determined at trial, if he or she reasonably believes that using or threatening to use such force is necessary to prevent imminent death or great bodily harm to himself or herself or another, or to prevent the imminent commission of a criminal felony.
Sir, get to the point, sir. Because
the point I'm getting to is that they don't have a duty to retreat. Stand your ground does not apply in this case. It does not. It is an automatic presumption when you're in your home. The only thing that remains to be determined is whether or not, as she said, the woman was attempting a forcible entry to break into her home. The question will be whether or not that was true, because the law specifically allows you to use deadly force if they are in the process of a tumultuous, unlawful entry. It says it in the law. That's why I wanted to read it.
Okay. Okay. So hold on a minute. Hold on a minute, Janet. Okay. So this investigation is still going on. I don't know if the woman had a Ring camera or what. All right. So if she had one, it would definitely show us what the mother was doing. Was she kicking the door? Was she forcing herself in? We don't know that, right? Okay. Now, let me finish. Knocking on a door is not a crime. Coming up to your door is not a crime. Okay?
I know.
That's not a crime. There's an entry door into your residence. Yes, I'm on your property. And you have not given me any thing of saying, hey, look, get off my property or anything. That has not been shared in the story. But you do not have, I don't give a damn what the laws say, because see, there's again where I said that these laws are so vague and people are taking advantage of what they think they can do. You can't murder the mailman. You can't murder the Amazon dude who's bringing your package. You can't murder the guy who's bringing your package from FedEx because they knocked on your door. See, what it tells me is that she knew it was the mother of the child that she was fussing about playing in the field next door. She knew that.
But
SARS, obviously, her door must have been locked. Okay, because within my dwelling, I locked my door to keep people from coming inside my residence. Right? You do the same thing. So
but you're
knocking on the door, and all you do is just not answer the door. And you know what you do? You call law enforcement if it becomes a problem. You do not murder a person and shoot through a door. You don't do
uncontested.
That.
I have to absolutely agree with you, sir, but that's the reason why I used specifically the words I did use, to exclude the possibility or the legality of shooting a mailman or a delivery man just trying to make delivery. I use the word tumultuous. That means in a manner calculated to cause distress, alarm, or fear. I'm talking about tumultuous entry only, not people who want to solicit you to be a member of Jehovah's Witnesses. I mean, it's important to read the law. It's not a vague law. It is very specific. That's what I'm trying to tell you. It's not vague. People's interpretations of it are vague, but the law is quite clear.
Okay.
So, again.
So, do you think she was right? Well, I just have to ask you one question.
No, I don't think she was right. I don't know. That's the point I'm trying to make. That's the point I'm trying to make. I don't know. I'm willing to wait on the evidence presented before the court.
Good point.
I would implore everyone to be willing to do the same and not prejudge it. Now, I'm perfectly prepared to agree she may be guilty of manslaughter and or second-degree murder. I mean,
oh, well, they said
manslaughter. That's not an unreasonable assumption to me. But I got to see what the evidence against her is first. And if it holds up, hey, take her out and lock her up for how many years the law allows them to be done. It was a tragedy. A mother is dead. There was a lot of bad blood between these two people for a long period of time. It would appear she herself is guilty of a battery on the child by hitting her in the toe with a roller skate. But none of that, even if that is true, even if she is guilty of a battery on the woman's child, once she went into her house and closed the door, even the police couldn't get her out of the house unless she gave them consent to go in. They had a search warrant or an arrest warrant.
Well,
so,
now,
I mean,
hold on, sir. No, okay. Arrest warrant or a search warrant, granted, but they can take a look at the child. If the child has a bruise and the child says this and that and the other, this is what happened, well then, right, the police have the right to investigate. She's not going to shoot her gun through the door and kill a cop, is she? Hell no.
Wait a minute, Florida has laws saying that you can use deadly force against anyone who's lost threatening your life.
Sarge.
That would include a police officer, by the way.
No, what I'm saying, I'm going to let you respond, but I'm saying, though, but the thing is that where this mother was fed up with the harassment of her her child and probably other children in the neighborhood playing in a field. Let's stick to the point. This woman doesn't own anything there. She's a renter. Don't forget that. She's a renter. She don't own it. She just pays the state. She took it on herself like she owned that field. She took it on herself to believe that she owned that house. And once she's behind that entry door, if anyone continues to try to knock on the door, I don't know if the mother was banging on the door. We don't know all that. Still and again, there's a phone. You can call the cops on her, not a gun. See, that's what we fail to understand when we try to sit up here and defend killers.
Well, I'm
murderers.
Not defending her. I don't know whether she's guilty or not.
I'm not saying you, sir. I'm saying I read a lot of responses to these type of stories, and it boggles my mind that people feel like she's in the right. No, you're not.
Well, they're wrong.
You had a separation of room. You had a separation of room. This woman is not in your face. She's outside your residence. She's standing outside the door, knocking on your door. You choose deadly force. Again, I'll say this. If the woman was kicking the door, trying to force her way in, which we don't know, but I'm pretty sure the child who watched their mother die can tell the truth.
Now, you have just made a fine case for the mother, for the defense of the mother. Were she to be charged with, say, going up to the door and engaging in vandalism by damaging the door frame, because I understand there's a shoe print on the door from her shoe from where she kicked it.
Correct.
And if she has been arrested and she's been charged with going up to the door and vandalizing the door, damaging the door, making threats against the woman, you have made a case in defense of her. Her actions, you have made a case for mitigation of her actions by virtue of the outrage generated by her striking her child.
But that still has no bearing on whether or not
the actions of the home resident were legal or not.
Right, I did that for the fact of where, as the investigation goes forward, it has to be evidence proof that that happened. We don't know that at this point.
So
I'm glad that you brought that up because, right, there's a lot of investigations that go awry and cops or investigators, drop the ball. But in order to say that this woman was justified of shooting through her door, there has to be some damage to her door, right? There has to be a footprint that this person was trying to actually breach her residence, actually trying to get inside her to harm her. Because if you try to breach something or breach a door, you're trying to get to what's on the other side of that, right? Common sense.
Correct.
But if you just
knock on the door
or use your fist and bang on the door to get a person's attention, that doesn't give you the right to blast somebody to death because they're knocking on the door. You have a phone. You can call the police and say, hey, look, there's somebody at my door that keeps knocking on my door. I don't want to talk to them. Yes, this is the situation. You could do that before grabbing a gun. And she could have killed that kid that was standing there, right? Okay. Let me move on to another story here. And we're going to go about a few minutes over as normal, Janet, on the show, because I definitely want to talk about this one. This is interesting. Excuse me. 15-year-old black teen shot and killed by a former police officer, mom says. 15-year-old Cornelius McGee Jr. was shot and killed by a former police officer who was upset that the teen was dating his daughter, according to the boy's mom. On Monday, May 22nd, Clarksville Police Department said McGee Jr., 15, was fatally shot by a former officer but did not clarify which department he belonged to, Fox 13 reports. The Mississippi Bureau of Investigation said investigators are, quote, actively gathering information on a shooting in Clarksville, adding that, quote, at this time, unquote, the shooting didn't involve an officer. Well, they're right. He's a former officer. McGee Jr.'s mom, Jacqueline Rash, said the shooter was upset that her son was in a mutual relationship with his daughter. The man previously warned McGee Jr. to not visit her at his home. When the man spotted the teen at his home, McGee Jr. attempted to flee. Keep in mind the words that I emphasize. As her son was running away, Rash said the man shot McGee Jr. in the back while he was climbing a fence. Hold on a minute. What is the rest of the story? There's more to this story. Janet, I'm not seeing that here, but I'll pull it up. This one will give all of it. Okay, so I'm going to tell you guys what I did see. Allegedly, this officer, and I'm trying to pull it up, former officer, I should say, was upset because this black teen was dating his white daughter. Okay? And according to the story that I read earlier, is that he came home and caught him at the residence, right, with his daughter. Okay, here we go. I'm going to pull it up. Okay. All right, so, and the teen ran out the house and climbed the fence. Officer shot him in the leg and then shot him again in the back as he was fleeing. The family of Andrew Bankhead, the former Mississippi police officer who allegedly shot and killed 15-year-old Cornelius McGee Jr., claimed Bankhead is innocent and the narrative being portrayed as a lie. Here's the crazy part of it. Quote, they have judged my cousin, this is a relative of the family, tried him and convicted him based on a lie, Julius Voss, the first cousin of Bankhead, told WREG. Quote, had never seen him before, don't know him, hadn't seen him, knows nothing about him. But McGee's mother insists her son was killed unjustly and Bankhead shot her son after catching him with his 15-year-old daughter. Voss pushed back on that narrative, claiming that Bankhead doesn't have a 15-year-old daughter. Quote, there is no 15-year-old girl, Voss said.
we definitely want to get that established first, that there was no girl letting the young man in the house. He also claimed that video security cameras caught a suspect entering Bankhead's house through a window holding a AC unit. The Mississippi Bureau of Investigation has not released the video footage, calling an, quote, open, ongoing investigation. McGee's mother also said she saw the footage and said the person in the video is not her son. Bankhead was then identified through social media as the man who shot and killed the 15-year-old Cornelius Mills. Okay, so let me move forward a little bit. New One also found the social media page of Andrew Bankhead, although unsubstantiated, with photos of his Clarksdale police vehicle as well as other posts confirming his previous position in law enforcement in Mississippi. All right, so here's another story of a person being an unarmed person being shot. And things that were, when they say he was climbing a fence, he's retreating. He's running away. What gives you the right to shoot and kill? He's not attacking you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I'm looking at. Because, see, when I was growing up, I'm 61 years old. When I was growing up, I was always told, and I don't know if that still exists, that if a person is fleeing, let's say they're breaking your window of your house, and all of a sudden you surprise them with your gun, and they turn the other way, and they're out there in your yard running, you can't shoot and kill them. You've seen the videos or you've heard the stories of where, make sure they're inside the house, got to prove they were inside your residence, not just on your property, inside your residence. But this is where this officer, former officer, I guess, took the law in his hands. Now, you saw where I read where the cousin says this officer doesn't have a daughter. That's interesting. So why would the mother of the murdered child says he has one? Why would the cousin say he doesn't? I mean, that boggles my mind. Does he have a daughter or not? I would think so. They claim he was stealing an air conditioner. Well, if he had to climb a fence, what, he's going to throw this air conditioner over a fence? Most fences are about 6 feet, roughly. Unless it's one of those little small, short, 4-foot fences, you know, for maybe your dog. But this story has a smell of bullshit. Janet, what's your thoughts? You read it.
Did you say me?
No, I was asking Janet, now I'm going to get to you, sir.
Oh.
No, you can get to him first. You can get to him first.
Janet,
well, thank
passes
you.
Her time to you.
Yeah, thank you. As a retired police officer myself, someone who regularly carries a firearm on both under the auspices of the Law Enforcement Officer Safety Act, which is a federal law which allows me to carry in any jurisdiction anywhere within the United States, provided I comply with the local regulations on concealed carry, whatever they may be, and also got a concealed carry permit in the home in my home state, which allows you to. So I got both. I understand it's a grave responsibility to carry a firearm and to use deadly force, the only deadly force that can be allowed in most states. And you do have to look at the individual state laws every single time.
Right.
It's always the same wherever you go. But basically, the only time you're allowed to use deadly force is when the threat against you is imminent. And they present an imminent threat to your life or your physical health at that very moment that you pull the trigger. Now, if the person, the offender, is clearly withdrawing from that force. In most states, you are not allowed to use deadly force against them if they make a clear intent to withdraw from the conflict or the confrontation. Now, I don't know if that's the case in Mississippi. I suspect it probably is. And if that is true, then this cop is probably guilty of some degree of manslaughter, if, assuming he thought he was allowed to shoot him. And if he knew better, it could be second-degree murder, maybe even first, depending on the circumstances. So, again, like I said, everything is circumstance-dependent. Everything, as far as whether or not he's going to be guilty, I'm not talking about the moral aspect, because the moral aspect is a different matter. We can say all kind of things about the morality of it. But as far as the law is gone, the only justification you have to use deadly force, as a civilian anyway, against another human being, is, you know, when you're confronted with an imminent threat to your life or your health. Imminent. It's got to be imminent right there, right in your face. Now, police officers have, in an odd way, more restrictions and some less restrictions based on Supreme Court rulings. I'm not talking about individual state laws. I'm talking about Supreme Court rulings involving use of deadly force, like Tennessee versus Garner and Graham versus O'Connor. Those are the governing rulings from the Supreme Court. But as a citizen, you've also got more latitude, like, for instance, we talked about with the stand your ground thing. In Texas, they allow you to use deadly force when you're protecting your neighbor's property. You can go out of your home into your neighbor's yard or home and protect them against a burglary. There was one guy who killed two guys coming out of a burglary, and they found he was not guilty based on Texas law after they had arrested him and charged him with murder. But then he researched the Texas law and said, yep, he can do it. So they had to let him go. So, again, it depends on the state. You got to look at the state. You got to see what the state laws say. And then we can talk about morality of it once we settle the legal aspect.
Okay. Well, you know what, Janet, did you catch where he said he's a former police officer?
Yes, I did.
Ah,
and
I agree
what he said about, you know, if the young man was running away, why would he have to shoot him in the back?
Oh, boy, you're breaking up. I can't understand you.
I said if he was running away, the boy was running away from the man, the police ex-police officer, why did he have to shoot him in the back?
Okay, now you're clear. I missed most of what you said because my phone was breaking up. It was probably my phone on my end.
She was asking if the suspect, the young man, the 15-year-old, was running away from the alleged crime. Because here's the thing. Let's keep in mind what the cousin said, that allegedly he was stealing air conditioner. The other story was that he was dating the officer's daughter. And then the cousin says, well, the officer doesn't have a daughter. So I'm staying on top of this story because it's like, okay, what is true and what is not true here? Okay.
Yeah.
So she said, but why would he have a reason if he's running away to shoot him in the back if it's de-escalating? He's running away, was her question.
So I agreed with Sarge.
Oh, well, okay. Well, again, I don't know the laws on self-defense or use of deadly force for a citizen in the state of Mississippi, but I'm going to assume that pretty much no state allows you to kill someone over stealing their property. I mean, and that doesn't matter what state you're in. Almost all of them have a prohibition on that. The crime has the use of deadly force has to involve some sort of physical threat to you that is imminent, either you or another person. And it has and that physical use of force against you must be unlawful. I mean, it can't be like, you know, you've offered to try. Say you're in the process of robbing somebody, and they get your gun away from you, and they're about to kill you with your own gun that you were using to try to rob them, that you were threatening them with, and then your partner shoots you to protect your life. That's not, no. that ain't legitimate, no. But I'm talking
Sarge, I want to say this. Interesting that you, if you don't mind us asking, you were a police officer. Can you say what state?
Illinois. The benighted state of Illinois, of which I am glad to be no longer a resident. I am now an expatriate from that benighted state.
Okay. Well, interesting enough, we do have police officers that are guests on our show on a regular basis, and love to invite you back because I like to put together another forum, which we had one. We have Officer Crenshaw, retired officer here in Atlanta, who's also a guest co-host. We have Officer Harper, who's an active police officer in Birmingham, Alabama. And we also have Officer, what is his name?
Mason.
Yeah. Who was an officer, also retired. He was in Waco, Texas. So, you know, I love to have a conversation with, you know, former officers and everything. So love to invite you. And let's pick up and just have a round table.
Well, I'll tell
you
what, sir. I've enjoyed this conversation very much. It's been civil. It's been stimulating. It's been challenging. And that's the kind of argument I like to have. I don't require agreement with anyone. I don't expect anyone to agree with me. That's fine if you don't. All I ask for is clarity, and I'm perfectly willing to offer absolute clarity to any argument I make or any response I make to any argument I agree or disagree with. I love conversation, and I think that police officers of all people have an obligation, especially if they're retired and they don't have to worry about what their bosses might do to them. They have an obligation to try to inform the people about the law and police work so we can have a better understanding of how people have to operate in both regimes, because police are civilian, too. I wish police would stop calling themselves other than civilian. They're civilian police authority, but unless they're in reserves or, you know, on active duty while they're in reserves. But anyway, police officers and the unsworn citizens, let's put it that way, the citizens who are not sworn, and so they can better interact with each other with the least amount of friction. I'm all for that. So if you want to have me on, I'm more than happy and more than willing to participate.
I'd appreciate that. And next weekend, by the way, I want to let everybody know, next Saturday, by popular demand, you know, we're going to continue our music journey. As you all well know, last Saturday we had Mr. T.C. Tompkins, executive producer, executive music executive, who's worked as an executive for many labels. He shared a lot of stuff about Michael Jackson, a few other artists last Saturday. By popular demand, he's going to return next Saturday and give a story about how Guy, the legendary Greek guy, Teddy Riley, almost didn't become available to you. Okay, so should be an interesting conversation. Thank you, Sarge, for sending me your information there. I see it on the board here. And then I'm going to holler at the other officers and see if we can have another great round table. The first one that we had was so awesome. In fact, Officer Mason said, wow, this is great to talk to other officers, you know, and just have that conversation of things that are going on and what their feelings are in the communities and just in total what can be better with the police force. And so I love that type of conversation. I love it.
Yeah. There's a lot of misunderstandings about it from both sides, and it's just these misunderstandings that really kind of get to me. I mean, your fellow citizens have absolute misapprehensions about the law and what the law allows, and a lot of police officers get badge heavy, and that's where they get into trouble. They get to think that they are the police rather than a police officer, and that's how they get into trouble. So you got that going back and forth on both sides, and I think if, you know, an honest discussion of things helps to reconcile these things so there's less friction.
Well, let's try to see within the next couple of weeks or a few weeks, we can schedule another round table along with the other three officers that I mentioned and yourself. I think that is so important. I think it's great to hear, you know, because you guys have worn the uniform, you've worn the badge and everything, you've had experiences, and you see what's happening now. So I'm always open to having these type of round table conversations of your point of view, and you guys talk among yourselves. I think it would be great. I think it would be fantastic. All right? Okay,
right.
So the time is now 8:10. I did go a few minutes over, but, you know, I can do 3 hours if I wanted to. But I'm not going to do that tonight. I know Janet is like, 2 hours is enough, Michael. But, yeah, great conversation. We're going to keep, you know, we're going to definitely keep up with what's happening in the political world. But, you know, this is the TMGS. We are that variety show. We talk about everything all the time, every Saturday, 6 p.m. Eastern, here broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. And, you know, it's crazy what's happening in this world. We know that. But we have to always be aware of what's going on in this world. When they said that Donald Trump was indicted, first thing that hit my mind was this. So, welcome to
you. By the way, you're a resident of Georgia. I am happy to be a resident of Georgia since 2008.
Oh, you live in Georgia?
Oh,
fantastic. Okay,
yeah,
well,
I don't live that far from Atlanta.
Georgia.
I never live in Atlanta. It's too much like Chicago. I don't have nothing to do with it, but I don't live that. I'm in a suburb of Atlanta. I'm not a suburb, but in the metro area of Chicago. I mean, Atlanta.
Okay.
So,
we are, too. We both live here. Yeah, we both live here. And
yeah.
Some of our co-hosts, unfortunately, there were some of them that are not here tonight. Officer Crenshaw lives here. Another co-host, comedian, actor, author, Time and Ship. He couldn't make the show tonight because he's doing the show tonight. In fact, you guys go to the Dry Bar, check out Timon. His stand-up comedy is hilarious. And you could look at him. You know, he's just – his stories are just so funny. I mean, it's like – it's true. You know what I'm saying? How he does it without any cussing. You don't have to cuss to tell a joke all the time, you know. But, many of us live here. Other individuals live in other states that chime in and tune in. So with that being said, we're going to get out of here. Hey, thanks to Sarge for chiming in this Saturday. First time meeting him. Thanks for your response and your perspective in politics. But, you know, a healthy is great. It really is. A healthy debate is great. And that's what we did this Saturday. You guys know every Saturday we're here live, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific time, TMGS, The Michael Gay Show on Blog Talk Radio. Just final words from Sarge, from the lady of the house, Janet Davis, and then we're out of here.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, like you said, healthy debate is vital. Iron sharpens iron. And when you're up against a worthy opponent, as apparently you are and your colleague is, I think it helps both of us. I think it helps both parties to sharpen their arguments and make them more more understandable and more appropriate for any future discussions. I think that's the key to understanding, to compare and contrast beliefs and opinions against one another so people decide what is the best and what is the most appropriate, believe or not believe.
Right.
I concur.
Yeah.
And I just want everybody to have whatever's left of the weekend, for everybody just to have a wonderful weekend and just be blessed. Take care.
Amen. Hey, you guys, enjoy, like Jenna just said, enjoy the rest of your weekend, your rest of your Saturday. Sunday is right around the corner. Wherever you live, enjoy your life, enjoy your time, because time, you know, waits for no one, as Michael Jackson would say. But thank you guys for tuning in. Bring it, boy. Thank you for joining us here in the chat room. And, hey, next Saturday, right here, our special guest, by popular demand, T.C. Tompkins will join us again and share us a story about Guy. Many other artists, I mean, this guy's worked with a guy, Sade, who else was it, Janet?
Janet, name them all, Michael. It's probably over 60 people.
60, right, you know, and he's coming back. And, you know, I love for him to keep coming back and everything. And check out his book, which is called When Music Was King, I believe it's the title. When Music Was King. I do have the book, and I have it where he sent it to me, and I've been reading it. But like I said on the show, is that where, you know, I'll read a chapter, you know, have to stop. And then when I come back to read another chapter, I read the chapter I just read, because it's where you – it's a reread, you know what I mean? The stories are just so amazing about,
right,
you know, these artists and his experience and everything, especially the part with Michael Jackson is just like, wow, you know. So
right.
Anyway, you guys have a great one. God bless you. Love you. See you next Saturday. This is the TMGS. Good night. Talk to you later.
Good night.